Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and some science issues. And actually, it's about the future tonight. So we're going back to the future, literally, because tonight is two scenarios for a future world, the next edition. Now, you could say, well, what was that first edition? Was I not around? You probably weren't, because it was before I was actually on the air. I wrote an article in 1992, about this time of the year. So that was 20 years ago. Oy, was that long ago? I must be getting old. All right. So, of course, I haven't aged a bit. But in any case, 20 years ago or so, I wrote this article, Two Scenarios for a Future World. And in that, I predicted what was coming about, what was going to come about. I want you to know that from 0 to 100, say, of all the things I mentioned, I probably did about a 98% on that article. So that was a remarkable article, and a lot of people who have read it have referred to it over the time. I've done other shows on talking about the future, but tonight I'm going to deal with this in a kind of a more specific way, dealing with direct results of two different set of circumstances, and it's going to be somewhat political for sure. You know, having watched at least one convention, I'm going to be interested in the Democratic convention here in the United States in terms of who might get elected president or vice president, etc. The focus of tonight's show is to reveal, I think, the potential changes in our world based upon what is called ray-focus changes, or changes in the emphasis of energy and the corresponding center, or some people call it chakra, the major center in our bodies that controls the type of energy that is changing right now. And I mean right now. This change is going to be most focused in just about a month from now. Or at least it's going to really intensify, and then it'll stay intensified for several months. So we can expect that it's going to be a different fall for Earth in general. And what has happened is the third ray, which has been one of the more predominant focus rays, and this is when I say rays, I'm talking about energy. It's just a ray is an old-style word used in a lot of metaphysical books. So I use it because some people know what that means. We're just talking about an energy focus coming from, strangely, other star systems and worlds different than ours, who are seeking to help, not hurt, Earth's development of a, we'll say, more godly kind of existence. And they do this by accelerating the development at the present time of 4 out of 7 types of energy, which stimulates our recognition of this energy, or we'll say the ability to process or sense it through 4 of the 7 chakras that we have. Now, that sounds good. Like, we're going to have, wow, better senses. Yeah, everybody wants better senses. And for the last significant period of time now, it's going on 675 years, the focus of energy that has been dominating of the four, actually, has been the third type of energy, which builds civilization, technology, creates things that are bigger and, we'll say, more directly related to what we consider to be forces in the world. Although any type of energy against another type of energy can produce force, this energy produces the most force when employed against any other kind of energy. And when employed against the same kind of energy, which is third-ray energy, it produces vastly the most force. It involves things like large-scale banking and police and military issues. It involves many parts of what we generally just consider society and civilization in general. So we've got to the peak. This is the peak. The peak is coming in the next continuing at a peak level for, oh, probably the better part of a year, but slowly diminishing after the beginning of next year. The point that I'm trying to make here, though, is when these energies, and particularly this one, get stimulated to a very strong level, which it's reaching its peak, people become more sensitive to it than the other ones that are around. And you say, well, what's wrong with that? We've got our sensitivity to building civilizations. Our civilization has thrived. Look at, go back 600 years ago, what was it like? Wasn't much. So things have gotten bigger and better. Bigger, sure. Better in some cases. I think the important issue is that once this level of, sense is developed, when you start to decline the level of growth of the sense, just the level of growth, not even the level of the energy itself, in the sense, it becomes, a crutch while it's growing, because we don't mind being selfish, which diminishes sense. So we get used to a certain level of selfishness, which has been inclining, not declining, in many people, because they figure, what the heck, as long as I keep my senses the way they were last year, I could be more selfish this year and it doesn't cost me anything. Sounds like a good deal to me. So the selfishness usually revolves around the third, or the type of energy that we're dealing with, and in this case it deals with material parts of what is society. And it, unfortunately, has been stimulated very far, so we're extremely materialistic, et cetera, and we're selfish about that, of course. That's pretty much what the word materialistic implies, at least connotatively, if not denotatively. Nonetheless, this doesn't sound like it's so terrible to a lot of people, except here's the problem. Here is the problem. Okay, you say, fine, I can live with that, except somebody's pulling the plug, you know, 50 light years away or 100 light years away. They're doing it because you can only grow something so long before it is a detriment rather than a benefit. And we're at that point. And it was figured out a long time ago. All this business about when to change this stuff was figured out long before I was talking about the consequences. I'm sort of like the guy coming along at the end and say, well, this is what it really meant, because nobody else knew it, or very few people knew it before. So I'm sort of explaining the outcomes as they're coming due. But the point is, here we are, and now folks are I got used to being so selfish using the sense of the third ray, which is called the throat chakra, by the way. Got used to using this throat chakra, and it didn't bother them before. And now the selfishness that has been increasing is overriding the growth of the sense. Because the growth is it's leveling off now, and it's about to decline in growth, significantly actually. And another ray focus in the base of spine or sacral center chakra is going to be growing more aggressively or faster, which will give us a different sense, a different sense of balance between spirit and energy itself, which is supposed to replace this gross materialism. Okay, well, how does that affect the world? Well, the people with the most power and the need or desire for it become unusually, we'll say, power hungry. They want to keep the power they got, and they want to keep growing it more and more, and they want more things as well. They want more material, so they're selfish in both ways, but it's usually the power thing that comes into play. And they become a kind of centralized focus of destruction to the world. You can say, well, how many of them are around? Well, there's been a lot more grown in recent times because the system allowed them to do that. And now we're going to have to come time to deal with it. How bad is it? Well, bad enough to possibly end life on Earth. Look, that's the end of God here. It's the end of us. When life ends, so does the growth of God, so effectively the planet is a dead planet. So we're facing that kind of a terrible consequence. And it seems like an unworthy thing to be doing. Why are we, why is beings from other parts of the universe wanting to saddle us with this thing? And we've been kind of an experiment. Just, in a strange way, this has allowed the growth of certain kinds of evil, particularly monastic or mental evil. And, you know, that's a lot of lies, a lot of propaganda, just all over the place. And people have gotten used to that. And they think they can tell the difference, but they really can't, because their sense is actually in a bit of a decline. Much harder to see evil these days than it was some time ago. And so the problems are starting to stack up. But once the serious decline starts to happen, the ability to see evil is almost completely gone. And people will start saying, well, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. And we'll talk about a lot of okays in tonight's show. And you'll see that the that's okays are not probably the best thing for us by any stretch. And that's going to lead to possibly a snowball effect with the eventual maybe ending of civilization in some quarters. And if that goes that way, it could be the end of life as we think of life. So, you know, it's a possibility. Now, is this about the thing with the, you know, the Mayan calendar? And all? Maybe they saw something about this. Maybe they were taught something about this from the same folks who are doing it right now to us. Because they may have visited Earth a number of times in the past. I wrote about that. And, of course, the Van Doningen, if you follow any of that stuff, there's some truth in it. Some of it's a little exaggerated, and some of it's just fantasy. But maybe more truth than not. And so we really have an issue here of what's going on, that we now are in the, not the end of times, but the beginning of possibly that scenario. But remember, tonight's show is about two scenarios. One of them could be a kind of biblical, although not exactly even, disastrous outcome with the ending of Earth as we understand it or know it. But the biblical also has the coming of the world teacher of Christ pulling us out, if you have merit in it and you have belief in it. Well, that's a good question. And most people believe that it's more than merit, it's just belief. Well, he got into that problem a long time ago because of changes in the Bible. But the issue really is far more deep than that. If it was just about that, then everything is predetermined. And we really, you know, we could just step back and just let it happen, right? But that's not the deal. The deal is that nothing is predetermined. God is not predetermined. So we certainly, in following God, are not predetermined. This is ageless wisdom now. I'm not talking about any particular sect of religion. Most religions move towards predetermination. They don't follow freedom. And so the issue here is that we have true freedom. We are making choices. Those choices will eventually lead to either our growth and the growth of God through virtue and light. Same thing, like virtue is light in form. And the other possibility is we go down a really bad, bad road that leads to some serious, serious issues. Okay, so let me, again, remind you that I'm going into two scenarios. I'm going to describe the first scenario as the most obviously destructive, negative one. And it's going to be predicated tonight upon certain events in time and space that are easily recognizable, because I'm going to use the political process here in the United States. This is not a single example that controls everything. This is an example that comes from all kinds of activities outside of the political arena in the United States. It's only the more extreme example of some of those issues from Europe, the East, the Middle East, and other places. So do not think that I'm truly resting everything on just the political system in in the United States. That would be highly ethnocentric. And I don't think that it is true. But I'm going to use the political system in the United States because many people from the United States listen to the show, not everybody by any stretch. And so it is good that they at least be aware of this because there's still something they might be able to do about it. Whereas if you reversed it and only talked about every other country and everything else, it's harder to see an outcome that is possible within the time frame we have. So from that standpoint, let me talk about it in terms of what ifs. Okay, what if the following takes place in the next two months or so? There's going to be an election, of course, 2 months and a week. There's going to be an election, and that election will determine pretty much the extent of two things: the extent that the Senate in the United States, the upper chamber, upper house, upper, well, it's not a house, upper chamber, is actually going to be controlled by mostly the Democrats or mostly Republicans. And if an Obama victory takes place, the odds are, it's strange, that it will either be a Senate controlled by Democrats, but more likely, and even if possible, that it will actually be a true split with the vice president, at least a present count, and this can easily change in just a week or two, vice president making the deciding vote. That would still be the Democrats controlling the Senate. And then the House would remain almost certainly pretty close to what it is today, which is controlled by 30 or 40 plus Republican people. So the House isn't going to move much, but the Senate could move a bit towards the Republicans, but maybe not enough to even give them a simple majority. They certainly won't have a majority of 60. So that's where it gets real dicey. Okay. And then the next thing would be, obviously, the president and vice president will remain Barack Obama and Joe Biden. I mean, there's no changing that part of it, right? So they would remain in office. And these are some of the scenarios I want to predict so that you could have some, we'll say, very, very simple but more, we'll say, direct ways to look at this picture. Because of their nature and the way they seek to control and use power, There's very strong evidence that the president will rely to about at least 100% more, in other words, doubling the amount that he has used executive orders over the term of his first term, over the time of his first term. That would be not only a record because he's already exceeded the record in his first term, but it would reach a point by just the nature of substituting executive order for legislation that we would move much closer to tyranny and one-man rule. Now, why am I saying that? I mean, you know, why don't you give the guy a break, you know? Well, I kind of am, in a sense. I'm just looking at the past and kind of moving that so many inches into the future. But there's more to it than just that. It has to do with the fact that the Senate would still be open for control pretty much by the president and the Democrats, with the House locking up most of the votes dealing with money. Well, many people think that money is a way to keep control of the government, but not when you use executive orders to change the shift of governmental spending from one focus of what has already been, we'll say, from years ago, because there hasn't been any budgets passed, the emphasis of government to a new emphasis. Now, what's that new emphasis? Well, the new emphasis of government based upon both circumventing the House's rule, because the House is supposed to be the bill that starts tax bills, starts all money bills. That's not what's happening. The focus has moved to centralization of government, crony capitalism, if you're familiar with that, means, corruption, and a reduction in the ability for the House as a body to do much of anything. So they could just pass bills and go anywhere. And it gives the president the kind of, we'll call it, free hand to start restructuring the minds and the government, minds of the people, and the government is controlling them, and et cetera, from a government controlled by the people to a government that controls the people. All right. Now, why does the president of a country that's supposed to be the freest country on earth want to control people, which would be the antithesis of that country? Well, speaking of from a standpoint of a psychotherapist, that's what I did for a long time, and a psychologist that ran a mental health institute, I did that for a long time. Looking at it from that standpoint, the structure of this whole process is really coming from the inner nature, maybe even hidden to himself. That has been revealed by books he's written and by some things he's said, and mostly lies that he's said. And you put it all together and you come out with the following, that Obama, by his own description, spent most of his college years and some, really most of his life, even till today, befriending people who are radicals and communists. Communists are people who believe in centralized government. They believe in control of all forms of business activity. And they believe that all that can be controlled, people, business activity, even laws, through force, if necessary. You say, well, I never see Obama out there shooting people in the streets the way the Russians happened during the 1917 revolution. Well, today it's a lot slicker than that. They go out in the streets and they pee on people and they throw feces at them and they do other things. That they don't have to go to the extent of shooting people because it's no longer just a physical world. The mental part of it has become more dominant. So communism has come of age. Its method of force doesn't require that it be all physical or all violent all the time, only occasionally. And so it's kind of like communist on steroids in a sense, because it's much more powerful when it reaches a mental level from the physical. Everybody thinks the physical is the powerful side. The mental is much more powerful. All right, so he's got that background and presently living his life that way. He's hidden it. He's lied about it as much as he can. But weird, he also inoculated himself from being attacked about it by writing about it and by making sure that people could say, well, he told us the truth, sort of, you know. The other side to this fence, the other side to the fence, is his relationship with his parents and his grandparents. If you really look at it straight up, his grandparents are part of a very strong left wing, many people call the communist, church. Yeah, that's grandparents. Some people call it the Red Church or whatever. And, you know, it's just like Reverend Wright, he was the church they went to was a similar kind of church. And, you know, many people thought back in the 50s when these churches became prominent that they were very dangerous. But people were still allowed, of course, because of freedom of religion and freedom in general, to have those views if they wanted. Well, okay, so that's his grandparents on his mother's side. They were communists. Okay, I don't know how to call them, whatever you want to call them. You can call them socialists if you prefer. It's Socialists are people who want centralized government, and they want control over the government and over the people, but they want to do it without violence, generally. They do it through laws and manipulation. And then there's the progressives who basically kind of join together some of the communist ideas with some of the socialist ideas. But the progressives mostly believe that government, the main reason you have centralized government is because they believe that they, the progressives, should run everything because they're smarter than everybody else. Not all communists are progressives, which is kind of a weird thing. But most progressives are pretty strongly leaning very, very far left. And they at least are socialists because socialism came from the progressive movement and vice versa. They kind of fed on each other. Eventually they become, you couldn't tell them from the start. Much the same thing. All right. So, progressives believe that society should be redistributed wealth based upon not just need, which is what communism says, but based upon the worth of the person to the society. That's more fascism, too, by the way. So, progressives tend to be easily culled into the fascistic side, which is that instead of, getting things based upon need, you get things based upon how much the society needs you. If they don't need you much, if you're an old person, if you've got a lot of problems, you know, progressives want to get rid of you. They want to kill you. Babies that aren't needed to get rid of them. Anybody that isn't needed by society, it's okay to kill them. That's more of a fascistic kind of socialism. And then the communist side of it would be that people get things based upon need. It's a more gentler way, supposedly, with less egotism. Most people today are rarely communist. They are more progressive than not, that are towards the communist side. Kind of a strange thing. All right, getting back. So Obama's got a father. And his father is not an American citizen. He's a Kenyan. What do we know about that country? Well, they got the short end of the stick. They were colonialized. And the U.S. definitely was backing that, although we weren't the colonists. But his father saw, that the United States was a culprit. Now, the weird thing is he applied for a U.S. visa as a student to come here and study to advance himself, because this is the only place he could advance himself. The country he came from, he couldn't. Yet he was a colonial communist, or some people would say anti-colonialism communist, who wanted to get rid of countries like the United States, which were colonizing, and thought that communism was a way to destroy capitalism as it was practiced by the United States. So this is the way that, we'll say, Obama's father approached his understanding of the worldview. But the strange thing is Obama's mother had a nexus to that. She wasn't exactly a colonial communist when she met Obama's father. She was more of a pure communist. You get what you need based upon you. You deserve to get what you need. Whereas the colonial communist wants to redistribute wealth but has a somewhat progressive side to it because they seek more power to keep the colonializing countries from taking them over. So weird as it sounds, they want to be free by subjecting and controlling other people and forcing other nations that would try to take them over out, which he saw the United States as being the prominent nation doing this, which almost pure fiction, by the way. Yes, the CIA and certain other parts of the United States government did some bad things and supported some colonialism, and there were times in U.S. history when colonialism was part of our shtick, because that's the way a lot of countries were. We just wanted to get on the bandwagon. But never to the level that a lot of other countries were doing it. nonetheless, Obama's exposed to this. It's his mother and grandparents are bringing him up, you know that. He's more impressed by his father's worldview. Not because it's a more special, brilliant worldview, but because when you don't have something, that's what you want to be in some people's minds. And Obama didn't have his father. His father was kind of a vacant person who would speak to him in some ways, but only mostly at a distance, and he had very little contact in relationship to a long life without him. I mean, he had some, but not enough. And then finally, I had the final ingredient that he was removed from Hawaii and taken to Indonesia at a young age. Well, that's a very strong thing. And he was exposed to radical Islam and became a Muslim. Now, that doesn't mean that his father there was as radical as he became himself. This is the weird thing about it. He has a second father now. And his first father is a colonial communist. His second father is a fairly radical Muslim living in Indonesia and wanting to overthrow the existing Indonesian government the way his first father, or his natural father, wanted to overthrow the Kenyan government, who was controlled by an outside colonial force. So you've got a very strange circumstance set up here. You're talking about it from a psychotherapeutic evaluation, which I couldn't really say this is, but the point is, it's kind of, you know, it gets to the point where we're looking at how come this guy's ticking this way, because it doesn't make sense. Well, it's starting to make more sense now. He basically is more affected by the male images in his life because they're vacant. Well, what about his father in Indonesia? Wasn't he there for him? Well, it turns out that his father in Indonesia was more concerned about his faith than about being a parent. And he was more concerned about indoctrinating Obama into being Muslim and changing his, what was a radical Christian view, a communist Christian view, into a, now we'll call it, Muslim fundamentalist view, which at that point was starting to become radicalized. Because we've got to remember, this is some time ago. And so all of this father stuff is getting into Obama's head and into his worldview. By the age of 19, when he returns to the United States, his worldview is the following. One, he is a Muslim. Two, he is fairly radical in his Islamic teachings, but does not go as far radical as his father was, or is, at that age of 19, because now his mother's leaving his father. Because the process that he's put through is, in some ways, as far as he can see, running counter to his native father, his father, natural father by birth, in Kenya, because they have slightly, or maybe more than slightly, different worldviews, even though there's some similarities. Because one is based upon the desire to be free of religion, because his natural father is a communist, and communists think that religion is the opiate of the people, and they don't believe much in it. And then on the other side, he has a father who strongly believes in religion, but it's a religion of radicalism and violence that is trying to effectively start a country that is more religious, going against, effectively, Obama's need for that unique form of freedom that comes with power and control. He now sees that his life is best understood as a rebellion against the existing government to a control over it, not to just be free of it. He's not a libertarian. He's the opposite. He wants a government that he controls. And that's called a certain condition, it's called narcissism, in which he believes that he knows best for all others because he's so smart, because he's got the worldview that's so strong, and that he should be president, and he's thought since he's been 5 years old he should be president. So this narcissistic attitude has been present in his life for a very long time, coming from these odd ways of being developed in himself. Well, now it's starting to come together. It's starting to look like the guy we know is President Obama. He now goes through college, and in college he ferments these views into his own unique form of progressive, first, socialism, second, communism, third, and radical, or semi-radical, is that fully radical, Islamic viewpoints. But then he's caught in a problem, because he's come back to the States, where it is not an acceptable way of moving ahead in the political stream of things by being anything other than Christian. So he says, well, I can do that because I really don't like religion at all. And it doesn't matter to him whether he lies or not because of the narcissistic personality that he has. It's called a disorder, in which he doesn't have very good scruples and doesn't follow a virtuous mode of thought. He follows a mode of thought about power and control. All right, so this is coming together to the point now where he rebels in college, he has trouble with college, he gets thrown out of one, gets accepted to another one, some argument that he only got accepted to the second one, by the way, because he was claiming, whether it's true or not, that he wasn't a U.S. citizen at that time. Because nobody knows, because his records have been sealed and you can't find them. But if that were true, it's more likely that maybe he wasn't born in the United States. It doesn't matter. This guy's got more problems than whether he was born here or not. I realize that would be an unconstitutional thing. But he's already done so many unconstitutional things. Is that going to make any difference one way or the other? You're certainly not going to get him to be impeached because of it, because he told the Senate. So the whole thing is an upside-down, ridiculously nonsense argument because nothing could be ever done about it. So now, looking at this from that standpoint, he gets into college and he gets special treatment. And despite the fact he keeps failing certain things, he's able to politically maneuver himself. So he passes courses, he gets into Harvard. Hey, a lot of good things happen to him because basically he's using the system. He's a guy who really has started to learn how to make things work for him and gain power and control over others without having to be caught or punished for being a liar, even a sociopathic kind of liar. It doesn't matter. As long as he's successful, he's doing okay. And he is successful. He spends time in front of the mirror smiling at himself. He thinks and looks the part as much as possible of being a successful politician first and eventually president. He is looking and of molding himself into the kind of person that people would trust without knowing almost anything about him to do great, powerful things, even if he went in a direction opposite or different from what he told them. This was his great, we'll say, feat. We're going to come back and talk more about this because it does deal with the two scenarios. And I spent a lot of time in this, but it's going to all come together as we finish this for the rest of the show. And we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're talking about two scenarios for a future world, the next edition. And during the first part, I've been describing the political nature, and I'm going to go more into it, that of circumstances here in the United States that are going to control a lot of what I'm going to finish the rest of the show about, in terms of what we can expect the future to be. So from that standpoint, let me continue. I was describing using psychology and psychotherapeutic principles about President Obama. I really don't have time to speak about our Vice President, Joe Biden. But I just wanted to go into this because seeing Obama from a standpoint of the inside out is maybe the only way people are going to get over the illusions that he has created that are so amazingly strong in many people's thoughts, especially if they haven't been observing him over the last few years, ruling, so to speak. So getting back to what happened with President Obama, he became effectively a image that he wanted to project to other people. This happens when people have this narcissistic tendencies or even disease, we'll call it, or problems, which is really a form of sociopathology, meaning that he lacks conscience, he lacks a strong self, he has a very weak self. But you wouldn't know that because he's so good at pretending. And he pretends things about himself that have absolutely nothing to do with who he really is. And he kind of gets off on the fact that he's putting it over on people. The person who has this kind of condition actually enjoys fooling other people. And then at times enjoys being amazingly, we'll say, direct and even honest when he's so much in control that you can't stop him anyway. Kind of enjoys that part of it too, because he likes the feeling of power, and there's no greater feeling of power than when you can be completely your obnoxious, terrible self, and it doesn't change anything because your power is so strong that you can control anything and everything about what people might say or do, in spite of the fact they know the truth about you. He's not 100% like that, but in some circumstances, he is like that. And he will be much more like that, by the way, in his next term, if he wins the election. So that's going to be the pivoting point for us in my description right now. So let's assume he wins the next election. The Senate will be pretty much in his control, not 100%, because there's probably going to be an even split. But even if one or two extra Republicans are president, a lot of things take 60 votes, so it's not going to change much. But if he does have a 50-50, he has a great advantage because he can get certain treaties through, and that's real important. And certain other kinds of things that could start in the Senate could get through. But the treaties, you don't have to have the House's vote on it. The treaties are voted by only, and approved by only, the Senate with the president's signature. Well, what the first treaty he's already signed and is going to go into effect during the lame duck session, because during that period of time, he'll have the old Congress, not the new one. He has still got the votes to do this. And he will pass it. The first treaty will be, it's called the Treaty of Free Seas or something like that. And it's supposed to be freedom of the seas. People are supposed to not be drilling too close to other people's countries. Somewhere in that treaty, it gives unusual powers and control to the United Nations over the United States government. Additionally, another aspect, to this treaty is that it allows the United States government to ban the free ownership and use of guns. Yeah. Well, what about the Second Amendment? Obama's not going to get around the Second Amendment by passing some kind of stupid treaty. Well, yes, he is, because the treaty becomes law almost the next day, or certainly within a month or two. Whereas anything that's taken to the Supreme Court can't be heard for at least 18 months, maybe 2 or 3 years. By then it won't matter, and I'll explain why in a few months. So he doesn't care about the Supreme Court anymore. He doesn't care about the Constitution. Never really has. He hates the Constitution, right? Yes, he's on record of saying that. So it's a meaningless document, are antiquated, useless, based upon a society of people who were mostly agrarian and not too swift, in his opinion. He's a lot smarter than they are. You know. And a foolish document. It doesn't really enumerate people's rights, it just restricts government. Really? Maybe that was its purpose. And he says the rights that it does enumerate are silly rights, like the right to practice religion. Well, he doesn't believe in religion, remember? He only sees it as something he uses. And if you pushed him and said, well, if you had to believe in a God, what God would it be? It would be Allah. But, you know, he doesn't really think that much of Allah either. He just thinks it's, you know, the whole thing is pretty much not very believable. What else? Well, in his perspective now, he's got control because he's going to ban guns. How is he going to do that? Well, the first thing he's going to do, he's going to initiate an executive order. The executive order is that because of the constant barrage of misuse of weapons and guns throughout the United States, any gun that is able to hold more than 5 rounds of ammunition, or 10, it could be up to 10, I don't know. So, you know, this could change with his whim, remember. And can fire that ammunition consecutively just by pulling the trigger. It's called semi-automatic, which 90% of all handguns these days are, shall be licensed as a potential gun of mass murder or mass weaponry use as a military kind of, or quasi-military weapon. It's a new category. Not assault rifles. No, these are quasi-military weapons, false military, but they still have the impact of being able to be used in, like in a military arena. And his excuse about self-defense will be people could still defend themselves. They just can't fire rounds that consistently could go off randomly all around them and kill other people. But if they're a good enough shot, they can shoot the person at them. But all people who have guns to begin with, they can fire more five or ten rounds. They can do so just by squeezing the trigger, must be licensed. That's the first step. Step number one. We're going to license only those guns, rifles or pistols, that can fire in such a fashion. All right, that's most of the weapons out there, but it's not all of them. You could still find some, and people have some that don't do that. But it is extremely restrictive, and he's going to have a 2-year period of where people can voluntarily come in and get licensed. If you don't license the gun to a person, and once you do that, by the way, it can never change hands without governmental control and authority about it. So no more free sale of weapons to people. He also is going to do something else. He's going to make the sale of ammunition completely controlled. If you buy ammunition, your name, number, everything goes down. You have to put down, if you have a license for a semi-automatic weapon, to use certain kinds of ammunition in, and on and on. That's going to be the beginning of the end of that issue. All right, so that gets rid of the Second Amendment. I mean, it's the beginning. The following year or two, you will initiate a complete licensure of weapons. Any weapon, any gun will be licensed. And then the following year, third year in, he will say that all guns will have to be locked up at a certain armory location, and you could only get them for certain occasions. But if you feel you have a risk of some sort, you can get a permit to take the gun out for prolonged periods of time and have it in your possession, but you then have to go through all kinds of other restrictions to that. So some people will still have access to guns, somewhat. Okay, that's his plan. He's going to do this all by executive order. None of it will ever see the light of day of any bills in Congress. When the National Rifle Association tries to take him into court, he's going to issue an executive order of sedition against any movement or group who tries to overthrow an executive order because it's against the government. And that group's statements will be censured. And their right to go to court will be limited. And the Justice Department will see to it. Eric Holder's going to do a good job of that. So I'm trying to show you a direction, a movement, we'll say. Now, that's just the beginning. You might say, well, why would he go after the Second Amendment rights before he goes after some other basic ones? I mean, that's like the National Rifle Association is one of the strongest of the, we'll call it, groups that are against him. Why would he do that? Well, you just got the answer. You limit the people who are affecting you the most. You don't care what law it's about. You care about who's doing what to whom and on what basis, and you say, I got to go after the NRA because they're the big guys, and if I stop them from being able to give money and control to members of Congress because I say they're a seditious group, that's one of the things I put in my executive order, boom, they're done. Sedition now becomes who you can give money to or not in politics. Sound good? Yeah, it's getting better. Okay, So now you're really fixed for good because you've gotten rid of your greatest enemy with one executive order. It's amazing. And he's only 3 months into a second term when all of this is starting to take place. People are up in arms, literally up in arms. And he's saying, fine, get your arms up. As soon as you come outside or do anything with a gun, as soon as you even talk about it, we come and take your gun, now that we know you have one, or at least you're threatening that you have one. Yeah. Thank you very much. Oh, we're going to the First Amendment. Yeah, freedom of speech. Wow. Yeah, this show is no longer on the air, by the way. And he decides that it now becomes sedition to threaten the government any time. By the way, there's already an executive order to this effect. Any time that the government is fighting terrorism on national soil. Well, all it takes is he just initiates an already done this year order that states that. And he says that anybody who speaks against the government can be held for an indefinite period of time without any rights, and that they just disappear. And he enacts it. That's in his fourth month. And you say, wait a second. That's the First Amendment. Yeah, that's the First Amendment. He's going through all of them, believe me. He's going through all of them. Right to privacy. You like that one? Gone. He decides that the internet right now should be and needs to be regulated by the government. It should no longer be under the control of various quasi institutions that basically there's nobody watching. So he says, because of national security and the need to control all forms of communication over, we'll say, digital areas, the government, for our own security now, is taking over the internet in the following ways. First of all aspects of internet communication shall be under the control of a new office, of the Office of Information and Technology. And this office shall be controlled by none other than a czar. It'll probably be Valerie Jarrett or somebody like that. Czar Jarrett, yeah. She's a great communist, and she's into the Maoist camp, so she really likes it, because taking over information and technology has got to be a good place for someone with her skills. All right, so anyway, he moves in that direction, and the next thing you know, he also enacts taxation on internet communication as well as all internet sales. He gives some of the money back to each state. But in doing so, if a state takes any of the money, the taxation, it gives up its rights to, we'll call it, regulate commerce from that point forward. Because there's continually commerce going across that state, through that state, through the internet, and therefore the 10th Amendment is discarded. That's the one that says that states shall be separate and have their own ability to make decisions about their citizens. We don't want that anymore. It's nonsense. Gets rid of it. That's a good thing to get rid of. He's been bothered by that one for a long time. This business of the United States is crazy. He suggests that the name of the country be changed from the United States of America to the United Federation of States of America. And why would he think that? Why? What's the difference, anyway? What's the difference between a federated state and a state? A federated state is a state who the ultimate control over is not the state itself, but the federal government. Wow. And then he makes a deal with Vladimir Putin, you know, the guy who runs Russia. But it isn't Russia. I don't know if you know this. It's called the Federation of Russian States. Wow, there's an amazing similarity in the names of the two countries. you would almost not even recognize there's a difference anymore. Yeah. And another thing that he does is he says to Putin, hey, let's talk about Iran. You know, we got to do something about Iran. Iran's, yeah, let's bring them into the tent of the United Nations and get this whole thing going again. And so he makes new treaties. Now remember, he can't really pass any laws, but he can make treaties. And he makes a new treaty now. Now, he may have to wait for another session of a lame duck session or another session where Congress is supposedly in session but not in session. He just randomly says Congress is now in session during any holiday. And the Democrats all get together in the Senate, and they pass any law they want. Nobody even knows about it until the next day. It's too late. They've done this already, by the way. Don't tell me they can't do it. They did it. Okay, so they did that last year. So he's got this great idea. It's a really good one that he needs to have more control over the United States, but the only way he can get the control as they have more and more emergencies, because no good crisis is ever avoided in his system of thinking. And he's got this great idea. And he says to Russia, look, let's work together. I want to make a deal with Iran. And here's the deal I want to make. And Russia's involved in this, by the way. Russia wants a deeper hold in the Middle East and wants to be able to compete more fairly with the oil it's producing with Middle Eastern oil. Middle East has too much oil, and Russia doesn't have enough to compete, although they got a lot of oil, and they can be very rich if they could just keep the prices where they want them. But they have more trouble getting their oil out of the ground than people in the Middle East do, and so it's more expensive for them. And then there's all that business about it's not that easy for them to get it out. They got one little port on the Black Sea, and that's difficult for them. All right, so they're figuring out that, yeah, they want a stronger hold. They says, here's the deal. You guys puppet the government in Syria. You've been trying to do that for years, but you haven't had too much success. We'll make sure that happens. The deal we want is with Iran. Iran agrees to never attack the United States. No more of this terrorism business with the United States. It's really costing him votes. And he wants a treaty with Iran, but jointly administered with Russia, because that's his real buddy. And the treaty is going to be the following, that for the next 5 years, the United States only recognizes the Israeli land based upon the pre-1967 borders. Any other land that Israel is presently occupying or will occupy from this day forward, the United States will no longer recognize as Israel. Whoa! Part of the land is going to Syria, so the Syrian government says, yeah, we'll sign on with that. Part of the land is going back to Egypt, and the Brotherhood is really on board with that because they're friends with Iran, and they hate Israel. They want to kill them. And then part of the land is going to the Palestinians, and they're all excited, and they say, wow, we just hit the jackpot. Obama's on our team. And finally, Iran gets control, not over Israel per se. It gets control over half, the half that likes the Iranian side of their religion, of Iraq. Just what they always wanted, by the way. So they get part of Iraq. The remainder of Iraq is kind of in disarray because the Kurds are still having problems with the remainder of the people in Iraq that aren't like the people in Iraq. It's a whole bunch of craziness. And then finally, Israel is back to its 1967 borders, and the following year, they are attacked by this coalition of all the countries that have been through the Arab Spring and past the Arab Winter, that are now run by the, you know it, yeah, it's them, it's the Brotherhood, they're back, and they're in full force. They've got control over a bunch of countries now, and they call themselves the Caliphate of of Muslim brothers and sisters. Of course, the sisters are said at the much lower breath level, because after all, a woman isn't really worth what a man is, but they're good for some things. They found that out, in case you didn't know it. But they're only good for some things. Actually, they're fun to rape, because unless there's four other guys around that can be witnesses against you, that's not rape. So they got a whole bunch of things that they find women are really good for. Anyway, they've got it all set, and here is this treaty that started the whole ball game from Obama. And Obama presents to the American people that he's the greatest president since sliced bread and Lincoln, because he now has resolved terrorism for the United States. We are never going to get attacked by Iran. Yes, they're going to have nuclear weapons, but they're going to be completely good guys about it. And then Israel is attacked over and over again with nuclear weapons, but they're tactical. They don't cause a lot of fallout, you know. Maybe they do, but it's really local fallout. And besides which, it just kills more Jews. And within, we'll say, anywhere from 3 months to a year, Israel ceases to exist as a country. You say, well, what about all those 200 nuclear weapons they've got, 240 or whatever? Well, you know, the weird thing about that is that the Israelis finally figured out that they can kill everybody on the planet. They could kill the Iranians even. But they won't save themselves. And Obama talks them out of a counterattack until it's too late. What's too late mean? Well, they get hit by nuclear weapons themselves, and there's nobody left to do anything. I mean, yes, there might be a few of them shot off at Iran. There might be some bad consequences from that. But it's worth it. Hey, no more terrorism in the world. We've got a nice caliphate in the Middle East. It's all taken care of itself. Oil's gone up to $30 a gallon or whatever. Obama's happier than punch because, heck, now all those solar panels that he was getting so much jawed about from Solyndra, et cetera, they're worth a fortune. People are dying to buy them because there's no other way to light your house. And coal, you know, that thing that he hates the worst, coal is now illegal. Can't mine it, can't sell it, can't use it. You can't even piss on it. It's just plain illegal. Whoa, coal? The thing that half of all the electricity in the United States was made out of? Yeah. Go figure. What's happened to the U.S. economy? Well, it's pretty hard to have much of an economy when the cost of energy goes up twice as much every year. And that's what's going to happen. It doubles every year. Business collapses. The economy collapses. But Obama keeps spending. He's got a great system. It's called printing money. He's so good at it. Nobody has ever been better at printing money. It's amazing. Actually, there's probably going to be a bill put in Congress that they'll put his name, his face, on the $100 bill, because that's what you're going to need to probably buy chewing gum. But the point is that people are complacent because, after all, peace in our time. Hey, we got it. Terrorism is over with. We've got Obama in there. Is that going to be any more bad coal production? No more coal stacks shooting off carbon dioxide, which is going to melt the ice in the poles, and half of it's gone already. That's true. Everything's going back the way it was 400 years ago. Yep. The United States becomes first a second and then a third world country. People are totally crushed. How long will that take? Well, by the end of the 4 years. I know it sounds impossible. How could you do that in 4 years? Yeah, well, you can. Look in history. Look at Germany. Look what happened in Germany in 4 years. I'm not talking about Hitler when he came to power. I'm talking about before that, the Wehrmacht. Those people, what did they do in 4 years? Check it out. And that's before there was an internet that you're taking control of over, and before they had the level of socialism we're talking about, taking control over coal, banning it, and then taking control over oil and literally pricing it out of existence and making it eventually a mandatory issue that certain percentages of electricity come only from renewable sources that the government finds acceptable. And it has control over its business. And it has many crony capitalists involved in it. So we're talking about 2016. That's where we are. The fall of 2016. What happens? Obama can't be president again unless he's going to executive order that part of the Constitution out. Well, he doesn't really have to do that because there's Joe. Remember Joe? Yeah. Recently called the mental giant of the Democratic Party by some people in the Republican Party. Anyway, there's Joe. And Obama says, hey, I can't be president again, but I could be vice president. And Joe, you could be president. I know you've always wanted that. Now we have a very interesting scenario. And so, I don't know if the Constitution really addresses this. I believe that this one scenario was never completely dealt with. There was people who said, well, how can you have someone run for president and vice president later? They can, as far as I know. And, of course, they can't, theoretically can't become president, so how could they run for vice president? Well, I don't know if the Constitution addresses that. If it does, I'll find out. But in my scenario, I like to be a fantasy guy anyway, so maybe this happens. Or maybe he executive orders it so it can happen. You know, just because it's not allowed doesn't mean it can't happen. Hey, there's Obama in power. But anyway, I would think that would be kind of cute. It may not be the only way to do it, but for him to become vice president for the next 8 years, well, Joe becomes the president. And you know what? I heard, and this is just, it could be all wrong, but I heard that Putin put him up to that. They had some deal cooked up. Last time they were together, you know, when they were laughing and he was whispering and other things. Because he was whispering, the biggest whisper came not to Putin himself, but to Putin's president, the real, you know, the guy that's just like Joe Biden. Oh, yeah, that's how we found out. Yeah, the guy who he switches places with when he wants to keep running and keep being in office. It's amazing. Just amazing. Okay, so anyway, talk about a wannabe. Yeah. So we've got this situation at hand. And where do we go from there? Well, if all the things that I've just said have taken place, or something even similar to them, not sure about the vice president. That might be pushing it too far. But however he manages to do it, Obama will stay in power. I guarantee that. Especially if he's done the things I've already said he's done. He will stay in power. Will he just discard the Constitution and say that he's now the dictator? Now the supreme person in power? Maybe. Maybe. It depends on the polls. And not the polls we hear, but the ones he takes. That will determine how he'll probably deal with the situation. Okay, so he wants to destroy the United States, it's obvious. His hostility about his two parents, I mean about his two fathers, excuse me, are such that he's releasing this incredible anger on the entire country, I know that sounds crazy. But what else would you call it than to be that destructive? He hates this country. He's not un-American. He's anti-American. A president who's anti-American? Okay, well, if you don't think he is, read what he said when he isn't in this country, when he's giving speeches elsewhere, and also, what has he done? Don't listen to what he says when he's here, because that's just for your ears. 2016, if all that has happened, we have many, many problems. Food is going to be a big issue. Why food? Well, food is the way you really control people. If you want people to do what you say, make sure they're hungry. And if you want people to, we'll say, acquiesce to your demands, make sure they're fearful. There's a lot of truth to these things. Now, that's Maoism, by the way. That comes from Maoist thinking and communism. And some of, but not most, of Obama's thoughts in communism fall on the Maoist side. Not all. All right, so from that point forward, the world will go into darkness, and the period of darkness will last decades, if not centuries. The United States is the leading country in the world. We have the most amount of people called spiritual disciples. What are those? People who truly believe in God, in whatever religion they are, it's irrelevant. And they do so, they live their lives to be virtuous and to create more of God in the world. That's what they want. They don't do it to force people to be religious. They don't do it to force people to even believe in God. They do it because they believe in God and they see what God really is. And they also can see evil to some greater extent than most of the people. And they try to do good deeds. That's who they are. Those are spiritual disciples. They're willing to change their life, to discipline their life, for the sake of service to others. And people who don't, who want to do that but don't, they're not disciples, they're aspirants. People who aspire to do that but their life is filled with a lack of discipline, so they're not disciples. The word disciple just means discipline. People who are disciplining themselves aren't the disciples. It isn't the folks who are followers. Somebody a little while ago, said I had followers. I have zero followers because I teach against followers. So if anybody follows me, then they're against my teaching, so they must not be followers, right? Real contradiction in terms. All right, so looking at this from a standpoint of a reason, where does this lead us then? It leads us into a world of darkness because the United States has these many people, the most of any country on earth. It isn't the number of people who live in the United States. That's a fraction. That's less than 5%, maybe 4% of the world live here. But over half of the spiritual disciples live there. And they are the ones that bring the most light into the world. And as you clamp down on their freedom to create, they become impotent. And it's as though they don't exist. And that's the danger. That's the real danger of this system. All right, so does that mean other countries don't count? Oh, they all count. And some have more spiritual disciples than others. Even the darkest of countries have some. But the point is it's difficult for them to create in those countries. So little can they get done. And what they want to create is more of life, which is God's growth, and more of God itself, as presented or represented in the country. God itself is not being destroyed, although evil would like to do that, but to preserve that aspect of God within the culture and society is very important. taking this first scenario to its maximum level. The end is a world with dictators, one trying to outdo the other. A world that has made mockery out of religion, has made darkness out of good, and has made insanity out of wisdom, truth, and reason. That's where we're headed if things go badly in the next election coming up. How much do I believe that Obama will do the things that I said and much more? I could go on for hours. I don't want the show to be only about him, though. He would, maybe. But I'm very sure that most of what I said will happen. Just as sure as I was when I wrote two scenarios for a future world in the first place 20 years ago, almost to the day, when I did that. The level of certainty of what I wrote, which it came out to be 98% true, was not as high as my level is today. What about the other side? What's the other scenario? Well, look, do I think that just because they're Republicans or whatever, that, you know, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are the greatest potential president and vice president since all time? No. I think they're the right people for the job at hand, which is to bring some more truth into politics. Attempt to be better than they have been in the past by their own growth. And to not step in as though they are saviors, but do a fair and reasonable job at leading a bitterly divisive country, deliberately designed so by Obama and crew, and try to lead us into light. Try. If they win, there's a good chance the Senate will have 4 to 6 more members that will be Republican than Democratic, allowing a mostly unified government, at least for a while. And they won't get everything passed, but more than usual. And the main thing is we'll go back from the financial abyss we're going to fall into any other way. And there's a good chance that within the first year, the recession will end. We'll have about 4 to 4.5% growth. Now, the reason it'll be so big the first year is that there's a lot of money that's being withheld. That money will suddenly flood into the United States, and we'll see the biggest kick that first year. The second year, probably growth will drop to about 3.5%. That's still not bad. And we'll grow the economy to the point where, with the cuts to the government down to maybe 19.5% of GNP, which is 5% less than, you know, the national debt will drop by about $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion a year. That will cause the recession to almost immediately end, and it will do something even maybe more important. It will reverse us from the abyss of going bankrupt. And by the end of their four-year term, assuming they stay in office 8 years of it, for a four-year term, the national debt should be about half, not quite half, or maybe a little more than half, of what it is presently. Maybe 9%, about where it was when Obama came in. And at the end of the second term, it should be down to almost zero. But that's a whole other, you know, I mean, it's a long way. I'm never talking about, you know, assuming they have two terms together. And so what is the big change then? What's the attitude change that's going to happen? People are not going to see that you should get anything based upon need unless the need is so incredibly great and the amount that is given is the minimal amount to maintain health and general welfare. So you have what people call a safety net, but it's only for those who absolutely have to have it and who aren't abusing it, who aren't doing something to show that they're trying to fix what's wrong in their life. Then the rest of us will start seeing the world as not a zero-sum game of rich people taking from poor people, crazy, which is the opposite of what really happens, and that there needs to be a redistribution of wealth. There needs to be an increase in wealth for all people, and there's no such thing as zero-sum. The more wealth there is in any part of a society, the more the society develops. The more wealth that is created by everyone or most people in the society, the more those people, by creating wealth, are creating themselves into greater people. But more than selves, there will be an outreach towards creating more of God, more virtue, more light in the society, which will mean more truth will be needed in politics than the great abyss of it today, lacking, you know. And there will be a push, we'll say, for enhanced freedom and a reduction in almost every form of regulation and control, as has been pushed to incredibly terrible limits by the present administration. I would expect two-thirds or more of all regulations will just be go away. And the remaining regulations will actually be redone in a way which is more intelligent to have less of an adverse effect on people and be more effective for the people who abuse the system and or just criminals. That will be the way it should be. Taxation, as I've suggested, should probably get away from progressivism completely, or nearly completely. Maybe below a certain level, sure, some people may only pay a penny tax, or something. Maybe just have a make it some ridiculously low level. But in general, with a flat tax, we don't have any longer this, we'll call it, mal-belief in progressivism. Progressivism is a form of evil because it pits poorer folks against wealthier folks. And in place of progressivism, I suggest stronger development of charity as a means of living, not as a religious factor, although that's okay too. And then beyond charity, make creative ways that people can help other people without it being called charity anymore. Make it part of the way society can grow. You become a society grower, a member in the society union of growers, instead of some more negative language, which means the people who are given to are being given out of the benefits of people's hearts. Well, how about making it so that there is no more charity, you just help others to grow the society who are disadvantaged? I prefer that. Now, the word charity could, in the more biblical sense, be used, but it doesn't need to be because the person giving it just feels that it's good to do, but does it because it's creative, and they're co-creating with the person they're giving to, rather than just saying, here's some money, here's some this and that. It puts both sides closer together, and it does away with this nonsense that one side is better off or should be better off than the other side, or one side should take them. It's like crazy business, crazy stuff. All meant to divide and destroy. What else can we see? Well, by getting rid of the Obamacare process, we could open up health care to be more free, not virtually the most tyrannical thing you've ever seen. I didn't even get into that with Obamacare. because I've already covered that so many times before. You all know how I feel about that. But certainly that Obamacare would lead to almost no health care other than the rigid kinds that are destructive to people. The best of that is if you get sick, you don't do anything. Then if you go into a system, it's going to say, well, if you're too old or too sick, you should die. If you're not too old or too sick, you should be treated with the least cost to us, and besides which, a method shall be used that's based upon crony medical system, so the people that get the most benefit from you being treated are the methods and people we use. Well, that's real helpful. Thank you very much. You can keep the system and I'll go to a witch doctor if you could find one. All right, so that's gone, and instead we have an open system where anybody can go any place, negotiate based upon some procedural issues in terms of them getting the best care for the least amount of money. And some of the Ryan plan is not too bad about it. Some things I would still keep more open than I have. That's a whole other issue. Openness means that freedom of ideas, freedom of methodology that lies outside of what even the profession of some quote-unquote medical doctor says is okay or not. Medicine, in Western terms, is about 70, 80% wrong. And so why would you want to make that's the law? Crazy. There's some parts that are good. The parts that are best are the parts that deal with plumbing, I call it. Well, you need something done, you need it done now, especially in an emergency treatment. That type of allopathic medical doctor makes no sense. You got a chronic disease, forget it. They're virtually useless. And they more likely will kill you. So here we go. We open up a system. We have a system now where people have more freedom. Freedom, and then they also develop more consciousness and wisdom. This system is going to have an educational system totally new, where everything is based upon what those who are receiving the services decide is best for them in terms of learning. That's right. It's the students evaluating the teachers instead of vice versa. Oh, boy. Does that mean bye-bye unions? Well, it means that unions have to change their ways because they're not going to have control over the jobs that their people have. They're only going to have a way of improving the performance of their teachers in various ways so that they can get better, we'll say, grades from their students. I like that. Well, of course, it won't be just the students. It'll be their parents and other possible ways. But it's still going to be reversed from what we're so familiar with today. Now, when you increase the level of wisdom in a population, not just the level of education, but wisdom, when you take the ability that people have of using knowledge and you make it more conscious, more applied to so many other areas, more creatively used so that it's beneficial for others, that kind of change leads to more light, more God. So this is a big deal. Do I think it should be done by the federal government? Absolutely not. Because the federal government can't judge teachers. You need it done on a very local level. Get the feds out of it completely. And make it so that the states enjoy more of what is, we'll say, freedom to control those things, but at the same time, they are encouraged, but they aren't forced, to improve their educational systems. There's ways of doing that that is not based upon force, but instead it's based upon freedom. States become more and more free when their educational systems perform better based upon the parents and students, and even the teachers themselves, everybody gets a vote in it, so that everyone says, yeah, we're doing better, thank you very much, and that makes the state more free, gets more freedom, not less. So you don't take things away from them, which is the present system, as a punishment when they're not doing what you want them to do. You just reward them when they're doing things that help people grow in consciousness and in wisdom. Wow. Sound good? Yeah, that's my system of education. I don't think they'll name it after me, but regardless, that's the general idea. And so how does that play out in terms of Romney and Ryan? Well, if you take it in total, you can't have a federal government that wants to control and have a system of education that doesn't lead to anything more than dictatorships and tyranny and children that become bullies and want to be just like their great leader. Yeah. You see, it comes from the top down in terms of an image and in a way of moving or developing yourself. We have a cancer at the top, a destructive person who's anti-American. Eventually, everybody else follows suit. You have people at the top who are not perfect, but who make as good a choices as they can at any time. They're noble, and they do a fairly decent job. That's what transfers through the whole society, and everything turns out better. What happens if this happens in the United States then? The United States, again, is a leading country. It is the leading country, the highest leading country, if it chooses to go in the direction I'm suggesting, and all of those spiritual disciples are unleashed to create. And they do great things. Some of them in business, but some of them in government, some of them in many different elements of society, some of them are great teachers, some of them are great artists, some of them are amazing scientists. They do all these wonderful things, and they do it together. Somewhat as a group, you could say. They may not call it a spiritual group, because that I call a spiritual group is people who are creating more light in the world. That's what I call a spiritual group. Other people don't. No, they have some kind of like, oh, it's got to have a religious connotation. No, I don't call it that. So this is the second scenario. It changes the world. Let's take what I took about Iran. Let's say you're Romney, you're Ryan, you're president. What's the first thing you do? Well, I had to call Vladimir over for a little talk. Say, Vladimir, here's the way things are. You're a dictator. As far as we're concerned, you're an enemy. You're an enemy against God. Not necessarily against the United States per se, but the United States believes in God. It is here because of God. And you're not. So, here's the deal we're willing to cut you. I know Obama said as soon as he got reelected, he was going to join you. We'll give you an opportunity to join us in a new place. It's going to we're dumping the United States, the United Nations. We're getting out. I can pay for it. I know this is radical, and I'm not saying that Romney and Ryan have the guts to do this, but I'm pretending like they do. Okay, we're going to get out of the United Nations. We're going to give them 2 years. And then after that, we're gone. We're starting a new kind of, we'll call it, group of nations. It's going to be the group of nations that follow the principles of light, honor, and true democracy, and have really free elections. No, they can't just keep running for a different office every 4 years so they can stay in forever and change their constitution or whatever. All that's nonsense. They can't fix the elections, and they can't do anything. And so, if you want to join us, we'll actually put you in as a provisional member, but you have to announce your resignation within X number of months. If you don't want to join us, stay in the United Nations and have a good time. But we're not going to pay for half of it, which is what we've been doing, and we're not going to support any of our treaties or any of anything else with it. And as far as Israel is concerned, we're fully recognizing Israel as an important nation. And further, we're going to arm them further. We're going to make sure they have enough bunker-busting bombs to finish off Iran. And on top of that, we're going to claim that we're at war with Iran because they've already claimed they're at war with us. So we'll recapitulate and we're going to put in a blockade. And then after 3 months, the blockade doesn't work, we're going to bomb the hell out of them into the next or last Stone Age, depending upon how you want to look at it. And they're not going to have any nuclear weapons. They're not going to have any missiles to deliver them. As a matter of fact, we're going to destroy probably their government. And if you don't like it, you know what? Go suck an egg. And then the next thing is they're going to have a little meeting with some of the other folks in the Middle East. You know, that brotherhood that says that they were so, so democratic now is wanting to get rid of Israel. We go in there and we say, look at hey, that $2 billion we've been giving you, forget it. No, you're not going to get that money. As a matter of fact, there's another $5 billion we give in military support. You're not getting that either. You know, all the stuff you have from us that you need the parts for, we're not giving you the parts because you're threatening our ally, Israel, and you're not our ally. Oh, you want to close the Suez Canal? Well, we'll open it with a few atomic bombs, and you'll be okay. We'll make sure it's forever open. Oh, you want to get together with some of your friends and create a caliphate? Well, you can try that and see what's going to happen. We are doing something new. We're going to create tremendous oil flooding in the marketplace. We're lowering the price of oil down to $8 a barrel. Guess what's going to happen? Bad news for the Middle East. Yeah, you got plenty of oil, but it's too cheap to sell. And we're going to do that by using only oil in the United States, for the United States. We won't be buying any more from anyone else. And we're also developing true clean coal. We're actually going to increase our coal reserves and use it. We're going to do some interesting chemistry. We'll raise the price of coal-generated electricity by about 22%. But you know what? We think that is worth it. We will suggest that to the coal industry people. But we're going to give them help. We're going to make sure they don't lose any money. And everybody else is going to vote on this and decide whether they'll go for it. But we're going to have as much electricity as we need to do whatever we need. And we're going to use all the gas we've got. We've got a tremendous amount of gas. And then we got this other thing called shale oil. We're about to bust that wide open. And you know all those places off of the coast of California where people refuse to have oil wells you can only see with a telescope? We're putting them in. And we're telling them that if they want it, want to complain about it, we're forcing them to not use telescopes to look at them. It's against the law to use a telescope to look at those wells. If you can see them without a telescope, you can say anything you want. All telescopes will be banned from the beaches. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding about that one. But anyway, tonight I'm very sarcastic and I'm throwing a lot of stuff in because what the heck? I don't get to do that very much. Why not? Okay. So what else? What else would you do in that situation? Well, you go through all the laws that are unconstitutional. You do away with all of the executive orders. You make it illegal to have any more czars, period. You can't have a czar or anybody else helping you unless they go through congressional review, period, done. Executive orders. You ask that there be a restriction to executive orders in an amendment to the Constitution. No executive order can be put in place for more than 90 days without congressional approval. That's it. If you can't get the Congress to go along with it, you can't do it. You can't go against the Constitution. And then you have what is known as an emergency session in the Supreme Court. Congress can't agree on it. You want an executive order past 90 days. The Supreme Court sits on it and finally makes a judgment, but they have to do so on an emergency basis. Nobody has to wait 2 or 3 years when the rights of the whole country are in the balance. Those kinds of things, when they happen, are immediately dealt with in the nonsense of waiting for the Supreme Court to decide, like it's some kind of problem with somebody having their backyard encroached on or something. That's not our problem. All our freedoms are being encroached on. You have an immediate, it's part of the amendment to the Constitution. You have some other amendments. You make a flat tax. Yeah, you get rid of some of the stuff I've already talked about, and I don't know if I have time tonight. putting into the Constitution the five different amendments I've suggested to you before. And you make it an open, free society again. Get rid of most regulations that do not involve criminality. That's all. You don't try to control the way people do business or anything else. The Commerce Clause is meant to be only strictly applied to businesses doing over $5 or $10 million worth of business a year. That's it. And even then, we further restrict it to a tremendously limited way that the federal government can interfere with the rights of states. The 10th Amendment becomes the most important amendment because it makes sure it ensures states truly are free. We have a real, we'll call it, state-run system, including what I had suggested about going back in the senators, and every one senator voted from the state one way and one the other way and switches, you know, all that stuff. That was on a prior show, I know. Okay, so all this is being done for what reason? To increase freedom without losing the protection of the government. The government's still there to protect. Government needs to be protecting, but what? It protects freedom first at its own cost second. Term limits, obviously. Three, as I suggested before, three for the people in the House, two, which we already had, two terms for person in the Senate, two still for the presidency, and that's it. And you could only run for two out of three of those offices in your lifetime. So you, I mean, that's it. That's all you can do. And so you can't be a professional politician, not in any true meaning of the word. And people are now free to do other things besides steal from being in power and control. Make power and control what it is, a malevolent form of government and one that is, in the long run, evil. All right, so we get into now the issues of how does this affect the world? And if we have a Romney and Ryan, that is my fantasy Ryan, are they really going to be able to do these kinds of things? And would they do them? Well, maybe Ryan, because he's a level, I believe he's the third level of mission. And he can't get elected president without, maybe if he's vice president for 8 years, he might be able to get elected president. He's too mental. I mean, people don't like him. They like him, and it's okay, he's a guy, but they don't want him in the office because they can't identify with him. They like the more emotional kind of guy, like Romney. Romney's not all that emotional either. He's still a functional guy, and he's a good person, a really good person. The thing is that can they go as far as what I'm saying? I doubt it. But I'm just, you know, this is my, we'll say, the better part of the second scenario. Can we eventually get to that part? Yes. I think that if they get half of what I'm suggesting done in the first 4 years and the next 4 years, then Ryan could get elected, and actually then the rest of what I'm saying actually could get done. And the main thing is to pull us out of the fire right now, because we're really close to complete destruction here. So that's the big issue. I don't say we can get everything as fast, but we can certainly get a lot. At least the lot is just not get destroyed. Remember, destroying the United States is the same as it's tantamount to destroying the world. That's where it may take many dozens of years, but it'll eventually happen. And so that's what the bottom line is. This is a very serious time. I know everybody says, oh, the next election is always the most important one. This is really important, because that third-rate stuff and all that other crap covered together has made it this way. It's not by accident. I know it was planned out a long time ago. But we've got to, you know, this is like the huge test. Now, did we all choose to be here during this? Yeah, we did. Our souls did. Some of us have more of a job to try to turn it around than others, but you know, everybody's involved, even if it's just a vote. If you're a Democrat and you're listening to this, give serious consideration. What's the downside? The downside of trying out getting rid of Obama compared to not. Think about it. And what if 10% of what I said was right? Remember, last time it was 98%. I had 2% failure. And I'm being liberal about that. So this time it could be, you know, let's say I'm honest, right? We'll see. But it's scary. Very scary. What's the final straw in this whole situation? In the second scenario, we move towards overcoming evil. It takes really fearless people to do that. We're pretty far from having generally a fearless group of anybody. A few here and there are fearless, and it's really few. It's the fearless ones that lead us to seeing evil. Without those fearless ones, people can't see evil. They are too afraid. Their fear numbs their senses. And in the numbness, they create fantasies that the evil actually helps to develop. That's what we're really dealing with here. This is the test. We are a laboratory to overcome the worst kinds of evil that are only more mental than astral. The old astral forms of evil were terrible. The mental ones are much worse because they take so much more freedom away from people. And they do so with so less violence, so it's not obvious, and so much greater forms of deception, which is truly greater in terms of destruction of a person's closeness to their soul than is the physical and more violent forms. When you're violent against somebody, they may hold on stronger to God. Even though they may be destroyed, they may hold on and see the evil. But when you don't use that physical violence, and you're able to do it through mental trickery and spin and this and that and every lie in the book, and you have created all kinds of astral fantasies for people that are now desired, ridden, and glamored, those kinds of are much more dangerous because people will let go of their soul easier. They won't grab for their soul as much. And that's what evil wants. They don't want us to look for our souls, to think we are souls, to think there is God. They want us to believe, to think God doesn't exist. They truly do. And I suggest that you pick for who you're going to vote for, who you believe, they believe the most in God. And there's evidence that you can say in their speeches and things they say and done, everything about them that represents that. Let that be your guide, if nothing else. Well, yeah, it's about that time. We're running out of time. I thought that show was kind of interesting. I was in a different mood from sometimes. But, you know, this is a show that is meant to hopefully get people to think. That's the bottom line. If you can think more and if you can come to some better understanding, higher consciousness, I've done some good. And hopefully I have done some good. All right. Until next time, till next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.